Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. My name is Keith, and I'm here with my co-hosts Rick, Tom, and Grant. How's everybody doing?
Doing pretty damn well, Keith. Doing pretty damn well.
This is Captain Rick reporting in. I'm doing swell.
And Tom, are you listening?
Ensign Tom, ready to beam down. Captain.
Sorry, our transporters are out of order. You're going to have to stay on the ship.
Aw, can I take a shuttlecraft?
No shuttlecrafts here, pal. It's all beaming technology.
Listen, red shirt, do what you're told.
He's dying.
Before we get into our topic, which everybody is hinting towards, but we won't give it away yet.
Give it away!
It's a secret! I can't handle it.
Pipe down there, Red Hot Chili Pepper. Let's go around the room and see what everybody's been up to this week. Let's start off with you, Grant.
Alright, well, this week's been defined probably by three main things. I finally beat Saints Row the Third, so I'm done with it. Over it, I tried the DLC for it. Big thumbs down on that.
What's the DLC?
It's more of just the same boring missions that I kind of didn't like in the game, so...
Wait a second, I thought you loved this game last week.
No, I love the game, I love it to death, but some of the mission types get kind of redundant after a while, like you just don't want to go through them. Like, the main plot line is amazing, but the side quests start to wear you thin, and this is a DLC comprised almost entirely of side quests, so...
Or you could say it's DLC that's fully comprised of dumb, lame crap.
It is dumb, lame crap. So I did that. I started watching Dexter again for some reason.
Yeah, which is Dexter's Laboratory?
Dexter's Laboratory, where this little cartoon serial killer kind of just wraps people in saran wrap. Fantastic show. I'd forgotten how good the first two seasons were, because I haven't seen them in like years, but I started watching them again, and yeah, it's still fantastic television.
What season are you on?
I just wrapped up the second season. I'm debating on whether or not to start the third season, because that was kind of bad.
You have to watch them all. Third one wasn't that
bad. Well, no, I'm aware of that, but I'm thinking, like, maybe just skip to the fourth?
No.
Blurred. All right, and then the other television show that I've been getting into is I just watched the first season of what's called Downton Abbey. It's an English period drama set in the, like, right before World War I. I can't even describe why I enjoy this. It's tawdry. It's entirely bullshit.
Is it current? Like made currently?
Oh yeah, the second season is probably going to wrap up airing in February.
Huh. And it's about chicks having their period during World War I?
Yes, that is exactly what it is. Maggie Smith is just a torrent of acting prowess in this show. It's fantastic.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so wonderful. But that's it.
Cool. How about you, Rick?
Well, since Grant's talking about TV, I will too. I've started watching Dexter Season 6. I'm halfway through, and it's pretty badass.
You had to go one up me, didn't you?
I didn't have to, but I did. And I've also, Hulu, a couple weeks ago, shot out the latest season of Misfits, that show I talked about on a bunch of episodes ago. Pubis fat fannies. It's all wonderful awesomeness. And besides that, all I've been doing is, you know, living the Jedi life, bro.
As if.
But you're actually smuggling.
I am. Every day I'm a smuggling. And I don't even think about the $1,000 I spent on a new computer that just to play this friggin' game, because it's pretty awesome.
It's still cheaper than a crack or a meth addiction.
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, not if you're addicted for a week. Which is all you'd ever want to be addicted for, really. I mean,
I don't think addiction works like that.
Oh, no?
No, I mean, I've never really sucked on a crack pipe before, but I'm guessing it's not like, well, I'm done being addicted this week. Time to get back to being a healthy citizen.
Here goes my plans for retirement.
I know, right? Well, if you want it to be a very early retirement, you can still stick to it.
Yeah, so that's it for me.
Cool. How about you, Tom?
Well, I have also been playing a little game called The Old Republic. I have enjoyed being a Sith, I guess, sorcerer now. I have decided on a path. It's the path of Throne Force Lightning, and it is a path to which I'm well suited. in addition to that, on the heels of a recent conversation we here at the Nerdtravaganza had, I went to the Disney theme park known as Epcot, where I was reminded of just how far short of the idealistic mark that park has fallen. However, I did have a good time. I don't mean to crap all over it. It's fun. I recommend all Disney parks to anybody inclined to visit a theme park.
Did you eat anything there?
as a recently minted vegan, or almost a vegan, I would say, I am avoiding dairy and meat and all that sort of thing. So I got to eat a flavorless vegetable lasagna sans cheese, or fromage, however the hell you say cheese in French. And it was a ghastly affair and made me remember how much I liked being fat.
And where was that lasagna from?
Yeah, interestingly, lasagna was on offer at a French restaurant. I didn't get it either, Keith, but I don't think the Italians would have taken ownership over this flavorless dish.
I would have to agree with you. But I hear the sushi in Mexico is really good.
It's got nothing on the... I totally missed a cross-cultural food thing there. Sorry.
Being the executive culinary connoisseur of Epcot food and desserts and deliciousness in general, I am unaware of this sushi in Mexico in which you speak of, and lasagna with an E in France.
France.
So, I'm gonna have to check this out next time I'm there.
Yeah, try it. It's if you're not hungry and don't mind wasting your money on food that's not very good, I would recommend you try it, Rick.
Oh, I'm not gonna try eating it. I'm just gonna try to figure out why it's there, because Epcot foodery is usually pretty dead on, and usually the food is pretty good. So I'm gonna have to investigate this. I'm gonna put on my R2-D2 ears and beep around the park and find out what up.
Do it, bro.
Did the dish originally come with cheese and you just ordered it without cheese?
Well, I actually removed the cheese from the top of the dish, so
okay,
it came off fairly easily. So that probably took away a lot of the flavor, honestly.
It might have been you tampering with a French chef's time-honored recipe.
Yeah. The cheese was like a... It was a perfect square, like it was a single slice out of a wrapper. But okay, sure, could be.
Somewhere a French chef is rolling in his whatever people that aren't in graves roll in. He was saying that about his craft.
Rolling
not
in his
not craft cheese, but craft practice.
It probably was a craft single right on top.
So French chef is rolling in his Boyardee. So yeah, basically went to Epcot. After that, walked over to after we left France, we walked into Morocco, which interestingly neighbors France, and realized that it was a paradise full of hummus and wonderful things I could have eaten. Oh well. In addition to that, I want to go quickly back to my Star Wars roundup and say that though the game runs with some settings turned down fairly well on my iMac, it doesn't have the silky smooth frame rate I demand, so I'm really thinking about either doing a build or picking up an affordable machine like Rick did. And I've spent a lot of my time in a very geeky fashion researching possible solutions to that non-problem, that first world problem, as it were.
Oh, well, if you ever need any help researching, I'm your man. I can do it for months.
Yeah, as long as I don't ever need to execute, you are my man.
That's it.
Exactly.
Yeah, did you ever end up buying a damn television?
Well, you know what? This brings me to my portion of the weekly roundup, and yes, I did. This weekend, me and a buddy of mine went out to pick up a new TV and a TV stand for the television. We went to our local big box stores, Best Buy, and go in. And I had been in there earlier and had checked, and you know they had a TV that I wanted, you know, a few days earlier. So wanted to go pick it up, and lo and behold, they have one in stock. But they can't find it. He looked twice, and I'm like, okay, well, let's say I want to get the next better television. And so he looks that up. They don't have it in stock. So he's like, let me check the stores around for you. He comes back. He's like, no, we don't have these TVs anywhere. He's like, there's only one in stock. It's at this store, and I can't find it. So I was like, that's great. This TV stand that I wanted, they only had the floor model, and it was all scratched up, so I wasn't buying that. So I sent my buddy with his truck, Rick, home, empty-handed. I went home. Then I decided I'll go to the next big box store, Brandsmart, and they didn't have the TV. Now, that place, I don't know if other people are familiar with it, but it's just a pain in the ass to walk around in.
It's terrifying.
I spent about 5 minutes walking to where the TVs were, looking for the TV that I wanted. It wasn't there, and walking out.
Were you in there for a total of 8 minutes and 88 seconds?
I wish I was, but no. It was actually quicker than that. For those who don't know, everything in Brandsmart is something 88. Usually 8.88.
88.
So I went home, and I decided to, you know, where else do you buy televisions? I didn't really want to buy it online because shipping would be ridiculous. Actually a couple years ago, I helped my father buy a TV, and we got some really good deals at Sears. So I go to the Sears website, and they are having a Midnight Madness sale. Why they are having a Midnight Madness sale on a Sunday, you know, in the middle of January, I don't know. But they had my TV. They actually had the model up for the one that I was going to get. They had it for $200 cheaper and free shipping. So it's actually sitting right behind me in the box, and I can't open it because we have to do this podcast.
Nice.
And for those who want to know, it's a Panasonic P50 GT30.
LED, LCD?
It is a plasma with 3D, and it's got the THX settings. What else? Other neat stuff. It's a Panasonic Fiera, so it does all the, you know, the online stuff, which now I've got that on my PS3 and on my television.
You can start playing PS3 games in 3D now.
Oh, absolutely, dude. I can't wait for that.
I'm jealous of that one.
The video content I could care less about, but playing games in 3D's got to be really cool.
So that makes you nauseous.
aside from that, I would like to tell a quick little story about me and my printer. I needed to print something up, and I've had this printer for now 10 years, and it never failed for me, right? So I didn't have drivers on this computer, so I go to install the drivers, and they didn't install. They ran 15 times but never installed anything. So then I just took the printer and threw it off the second floor balcony, and it exploded, and it was funny. I was really mad. It was pretty, and you know, I had to do something to make me laugh, so that's what I did.
And of course I was mad that he didn't bring me the broken parts to use at Robot Club, but whatever.
So yeah, that was my week. I've actually purchased the TV. I can't watch it yet, but I will be up all night putting together the TV stand and hooking up the TV and stereo and the PS3 and enjoying life in general.
And what's going to be the first movie that you watch on this TV?
The first movie that I'm going to watch on this TV is going to be either The Dark Knight or one of the Back to the Future movies, because those are the only two Blu-rays that I own.
Awesome. So nothing that ties into the show today.
Correctamundo. And speaking of the show today, everybody said that they have been watching TV, Grant and Rick. I, too, have been watching TV of late on my tablet, of course. And one of the shows that I just got finished watching was Stargate Universe. And in watching that show, I realized it had a pretty cool spaceship on it, which got me thinking about spaceships in general and sci-fi movies and all the different spaceships that exist out there. And that is what our show is about today. We'll be discussing spaceships, what we like, what we don't like, what's cool, what's not cool. And I think to start it off, I want to talk a little bit about the big two. You can't really talk about spaceships without talking about Star Wars and Star Trek. Me personally, I find the spaceships in Star Trek to be pretty hideous. When they came out, they were great, but you know, that's because that's all there was. It just seemed like the Enterprise with its nacelles hanging off these little thin bars and the big front piece, it's just like, who invented that? And I didn't really understand it. I'm not a huge fan of the old Star Trek, so I don't really like that old ship with the round nacelles on it. It was really annoying to me. What do you guys think about the Star Trek ships in general?
I love them.
Really?
They are absolutely iconic. You are the first person I've ever heard even talk bad about them.
I find them elegant, and I think that given the fact that they would not endure the rigors of an atmosphere in space, their sort of gracile, if that's the right word, design makes sense, but really no more sense than a Borg cube, to be honest.
True, you don't need any aerodynamics in space, but like... Right. Now, you said that you love them, they're iconic. Do you love them because they are iconic? Like, if one of those came out right now, would you think that it was interesting and cool?
And a good way to judge that would be to maybe compare it to the newer generations, no pun intended, of the Enterprise, you know, from the new Star Trek shows or movies and stuff.
I think that's not even a valid argument, because those are all, once again, iterations of it.
Right, so that's how you could kind of judge its historical growth and change of being a ship of today as compared to it being a good design, because it is really similar to the old one.
I will say that the original Enterprise is definitely a product of its time. It definitely holds a lot of the aesthetic sensibilities of other science fiction shows from that time. Is that kind of what you're asking? Yes, it would be dated if it came out today. But based upon what it was built from and what it's working on, I can find no fault in it. I think it's an absolutely fantastic design. I think that there's a lot of considerations that have had been made to make it seem like a feasible and realistic spaceship, if you can even say that about it. But yeah, I think it's a testament to Star Trek that, you know, a half century later, we're willing to go through and say, oh, that's why it's a two warp nacelle design. That's what that dish on the front is. That's the case where you would want a saucer in the front, you know.
I have to agree. I like the fact that they at least stuck with the design aspect there. And, you know, in the movies, Next Generation, even some of their smaller ships, they all kind of had that same look and feel, which you would imagine you would have, you know, when you're making a certain model of car, you know, all your cars look similar, all the Hondas are the same, all the Pontiacs are, you know, whatever. So I do like that, but I just, you know, I like the newer ones, you know, where there wasn't things and parts hanging off of it. I really like those, you know, where it was, the nacelles were like right under the body or just off the sides. Just didn't like the old Star Trek ship. I think it's pretty ugly.
I like the giant radar dish in the front. That's how they get direct. That's how they used to get their HBO in space.
Now, what about the other ships on Star Trek? Like, you know, comparing the Federation ships with like the Klingon ships or the Ferengi or what was the other one? They had the
Romulan and the Klingon.
The Romulan,
ships
yeah.
The two big ones on there.
Yeah.
And I will say the Romulan and the Klingon ship designs, once again, are both fantastic to me.
Now, those I like, but then again, they look, you know, more racy, I guess.
To me, some of them look like, I don't know, I guess I'm like, it, like Search for Spock, the Bird of Prey Klingon ship. I don't really watch Star Trek, so I don't know like what the ones on the show look like. But that one in the movie, like, it's kind of cool, but I don't like some of the design elements. Like, it has like, you know, structures on it to make it look like wing patterns and things like that. I don't know. I found that a lot of the Star Trek stuff looked kind of cartoony and not in a good way to me, for my taste.
Okay. Well, comparing Star Trek with the other big movie, Star Wars, who do you feel has the better spaceships? Go ahead, Rick.
There's way more spaceships in Star Wars.
Right, but which ones do you like better? The ones in Star Trek, the ones in Star Wars? Because a lot of Star Wars stuff is unique yet the same. I mean, you've got your big cruisers. You got your small ships. Like all of the Alliance ships look similar. You know, it looks like they built off of some sort of X-Wing design or A-Wing. And, you know, just had different iterations of that. Which ships do you think are cooler?
I like Star Wars ships better.
And who doesn't?
I think the main point about Star Wars ships is all of them, at least up until The Phantom Menace came out, all of them look so damn grimy and beat up and kind of bodged together. like, there's a lot, you can tell there's a lot more cultural influence. And I think, I would say that Star Wars has a lot more cultural density. Like, there's a lot more different aliens that you'll see in a cantina than you'll see in an episode of Star Trek. So you see a lot of different design aesthetics going into all these different ships. And yeah, I think that lends a lot to the feel of the universe.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, they had to kind of, you know, they are creating in a universe, whereas Star Trek was really about, you know, the ship and its travels through a universe, you know, where, you know, Star Wars was this much bigger thing in a galaxy far, far away. So, yeah, they had to have a lot more diversity. And then, like you said, they looked dingy. I like the fact that, you know, it looked like they were being used rather than just, you know, the ships of the old movies and TV shows in the 70s where everything was just white or shiny. And, you know, it was like, well, you know, well, has this ship ever been hit by a laser or something?
Yeah, it's like welcome to, like, you know, the space system. Shit's fucked up here. There's a war. Like, it immediately gets you into that feeling. Like, you worry about the people in those X-Wings because they look so damned rickety. Yeah. But they have shields and shit, you know? It's, I guess they don't need to have anything other than some aluminum posts blocking down the canopies.
Sure. Sure. So let's go around the room. What would you say is your favorite ship, Grant?
My favorite
in Star Wars.
In Star Wars? Once again, I'm a big fan of either the X-Wing, the Y-Wing, or the A-Wing. In no small part because of the amount of time that I spent playing X-Wing for the PC when I was growing up.
Those are definitely cool ships, and those are the mainstay of the Alliance, I would imagine. How about you, Tom? What ships do you like in Star Wars?
Mainly because I had the toys and came to appreciate the design because I had intimate exposure to them. The Y-Wing, which is just badass looking. I think because of its size, reminds me, even though it looks nothing like it, it reminds me in its character, I guess, of an F-14, which was a large fighter aircraft.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine it playing that role in the Rebel fleet, even though I have no basis for that. As well, I actually like what I believe is the B-Wing, which has like the pod that the whole, like, the rest of the ship sort of rotates around.
Yeah, that's the B-Wing.
Yeah, I had that toy, and I got it. I thought it was, like, gangly and stupid. And then when I started playing with it, I'm like, this ship makes, like, in space, this ship makes insane amounts of sense. Because, like, yeah, why wouldn't it pivot around this, like,
cockpit? Isn't that the one that's, like, where it looks like it flies sideways instead of upright or something?
Yeah, it's laying sideways on, like, it's laying sideways, like, on its single wing, let's say, with its pod to one side. And then when it takes off, it goes vertical and little wings extend. It kind of almost has a Slave One, like, profile when it's in that. In that state or whatever. But yeah, those would be my two favorite, like, just classes of ship. And then as named ships go, Vader's, you know, cool TIE fighter. And, of course, everybody likes the Falcon.
Yeah, the Falcon, yeah. I don't think we can even have that in this competition.
Right.
Or discussion. I'll go next. And mine's probably going to be different from most everybody on the planet. My favorite ship is the Tidarium Shuttle.
Ooh.
And that's the ship that Vader travels in when he comes down to land on the Death Star.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that ship just looks badass.
Is that the one that Luke was playing with?
Yeah.
It was a similar ship, but it was not a Tiberian shovel.
Right.
Shuttle.
Yeah.
Or a shovel.
But, I mean, that ship just looked, that black windshield, the white, the way the wings would fold up when it comes in for landing and go down. I don't know what it might be also because I had the model of that a long time ago and I built the model, but that ship was – that's my favorite ship from the show. And I have to say, after that, we'd have to go into the second generation of movies. And I even though I made fun of it like crazy when I saw the movie, the shuttle that Padme takes off it from her homeland. The ship. I looked it up. It's called the J-Type 327 Nubian Royal Starship. And I hated it because it just looked like an SR-71 Blackbird.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I've come to be like, man, that thing, could you imagine owning that thing, all that chrome on it, man? Put some rims on that thing, it'd be badass.
I guess it goes to show the decadence in which the Queen of Naboo lived in, while the rest of the galaxy is flying around these beat up T-16 Skyhoppers. She has her disco ball Blackbird.
Hey, she won the election fair and square.
Absolutely. And she kept all the lower people down underwater.
At least she kept the Gungans in their place.
You know, occupy Naboo, that's all I'm saying.
How about you, Rick? Which ships do you like in Star Wars?
Well, I mean, obviously, the X-Wings are awesome. There's just something cool about them still to this day that I really like. And the Millennium Falcon. It's just a given with those. But I got to say, the one that always stood out for me, that I just always thought was friggin' so badass, was the TIE Interceptors. I just loved it was the TIE fighters with, like, the extended pointy wings on the sides.
Oh, okay, yeah, I know what you mean.
They just looked so dark and evil and just so badass. Like, a regular TIE fighter is kind of cool, but, you know, it's a little stiff or whatever with the solar panels on the sides. But the Interceptor was just the shit. It just looked like it was made for, you know, dagger-shaped wings, four lasers. It was just crazy. It looked dark. Like, it looked like part of the Empire. I love it.
Yeah, like, the TIE fighter looked like cannon fodder in its design. Just bland, boring, functional.
Yeah.
The TIE Interceptor looked like it would stab you and then fuck your mom.
Exactly. It had so much style to it, and so sleek, it was badass.
You know what? That's a better way of putting it.
And then just for, like, pure, like, crazy awesomeness that I like is the Nebulon B Escort Frigate from Return of the Jedi.
That's another good one.
Which one is that?
It's this giant thing that looks like it's carved out of, like, it looks like an upside down canyon or something.
It looks crazy.
Is that the medical ship
formation?
Was that the one he goes on when he was getting his hand replaced or something?
That's a medical frigate you're thinking of, yeah?
This is just this big giant thing that it has this long bulbous carved up. The thing looks like hell incarnate. Like, it's frightening looking. If I saw this, it's like the nightmares. You know what it reminds me of? An old spooky broken down tree that's going to have, like, a ventriloquist doll sitting on a branch going, I'm going to get you.
It looks vaguely like a ray gun, like a toy ray gun.
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
I think
like a mixture of that and a hellish skyscape.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
Hellish skyscape. That's perfect, dude. That's exactly what it looks like. I love that thing.
That is a pretty cool looking ship. Well, you brought something up about this ship being scary. I think maybe what we'll talk about is ships that aren't in Star Wars or Star Trek. And I'd like to start off the discussion with a ship that I think all of you like and I hate, Event Horizon.
Dude, I was going to say that the frigate I was just talking about very much has that same sense of ominous creepiness as Event Horizon does. Another ship I love!
I don't know. I just can't get into that ship. Well, I guess because I hate the movie, I think the ship's stupid.
Oh, my God.
But there's been lots of TV shows and movies there's been several TV shows and movies where they're centered around people on a ship. Event Horizon is one of them. A show, Stargate Universe, that, as I mentioned, that's kind of a show that I bet they had been watching and got me into this whole thing. Are there any ships that you guys can think of, you know, or shows where people had to, you know, live or survive on a ship that you enjoyed or want to discuss?
Yes.
Hit me, Sergeant.
In the ancient anime known in the United States as Robotech, and I'm going to get killed for my pronunciation, so I'll just pronounce it both ways, known originally as Macross or Macross or whatever way you want to pronounce it. I'm not trying to be pretentious.
Macaroons.
Macaroons, if you like. Tagalongs, I don't care. The ship that the protagonists exist on is the SDF, is called the SDF-1 Super Dimensional Fortress 1, or SDF-1 Macross as well. And it is a basically this alien ship that crashes to Earth, and its arrival at Earth sort of unites all of mankind, because like there's this sense that, you know, we need to get together. There's aliens out there. No sooner they really get their ship operational than the reason for getting it operational shows up in the form of this massive alien fleet, and all sorts of heroic stuff ensues with this ship. This ship, it turns out, in terms of alien, you know, in alien terms, is not really special. It's just like a, you know, a gunship. It's got nothing, but, you know, they defy the odds and just battle this massive fleet as they accidentally overshoot the moon and end up at Pluto and have to make their way back to Earth at impulse power because their warp drives rip out of the ship because they don't know how to use them.
Stupid humans.
It's so awesome because, yeah, basically they try to use this alien technology to, like, take off. It breaks, and then they have to use their own, like, jerry-rigged thrusters to make the ship maneuver, and then they execute a space fold and way overshoot. It's awesome. And the ship has a personality and turns into a giant robot when it fires its main gun. It's just cool.
Turns onto a giant robot, like a Macross type of mech kind of thing?
Yeah, the ship is not in its original alien configuration. It could just fire the main gun, but through some, I don't remember exactly how they got to this because it seems so silly. Because the humans sort of rigged the thing together, the only way to get the main gun to fire after they had space folded out to Pluto was to reconfigure the ship on the fly into, like, this robot form. So that, you know, wasn't intended to ever. It's stupid, but it just basically allows this massive ship to turn into a giant robot and fire a gigantic gun that just destroys enemy ships. It's cool, man. Really cool.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was a show that I really got into, and I cannot remember the name of the show or any of the characters on it, but it had this really cool opening. What was it called? But it had this red ship that was really spiky and pointy, and a gunslinger lived on it, and I have no idea what the hell it was.
Or
but that was a neat
one. Or
no, what? It was animated. It was animated on Adult Swim often.
You don't mean
Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah, dude, I love that ship.
Okay. That show is awesome.
Yeah, that ship was pretty cool as far as animated ships. I don't know too much about the animated ships, but I like that one.
Oh, yeah, I know an animated ship you know.
What's that?
The Space Cruiser Yamato, sir.
Absolutely.
Space Cruiser Yamato?
Spaceship Yamato from Star Blazers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The one that looked like a big battleship in space?
And somebody went far on that design.
Yeah, I know, right? But it was still pretty cool, though.
It still looks cool, man. That ship's timeless looking.
Yeah.
Namely because it's a World War II vintage, but still awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
I gotta say, as far as ships that people live on, I really liked, and I don't know if you guys checked it out at all, the new Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
That ship was cool. I mean, that whole ship, the new show, it was just, I really enjoyed it a lot. But I liked that ship. I liked what, you know, they kept it. I mean, it's not really sleek and cool looking. They kind of, it's, I don't know what it is. They made what the old Battlestar Galactica ship looked like into something that somebody who is making it now looked. And I thought it was just cool looking. But all the ships on that show, I really liked the Cylon base ships that they had, the Cylon base stars.
Yeah.
They look like jacks with pointy ends on them.
Yep.
Those things were freaking so cool looking, man.
They were. And again, I mean, I really like when ship designers or your people making ships remember that in space you can seriously, your ship can be shaped like a popcorn kernel and still work. And those ships, they were symmetrical, as I recall, but they weren't built in, they had gotten away from the human paradigm, which was, you know, this is the front, this is the fore, this is the aft, this is built like a cruiser for Earth, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know, I haven't seen the show because it's still in my queue on Netflix to get watching, but are you guys talking about like the big ships that everybody lives on, like exclusively, or have you guys talked at all about the, you know, like the fighter type ships? Because in the old Battlestar Galactica, you had like the Cylon Raider ship, and then you had the Colonial Viper. And both of those, I mean, with your eyes closed, you could tell those are direct ripoffs of the TIE fighter and the, X, and the X-Wing. I mean, there is no hiding it.
Absolutely, yeah. And they even kept kind of the same design, at least for the Vipers in the new one. I mean, it still kind of had that, you know, three-winged kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, it didn't look... I mean, the styling of it was new. I mean, if you knew the old one, yeah, you could say this, you know, it looks like the old one, which looks like a Star Wars vehicle. But if you just saw the new one without knowing the old one, you could think it's a design of its own.
I do have to say, though, even though those two ships, the Viper and the Cylon Raider, that they do look like I said, you can tell that they were basically lifted off of the X-Wing and TIE Fighter, but they kind of still do hold their own. I mean, they're different enough and... They're different enough in design where they kind of stand on their own, even though they have that hint of like, I think I've seen this before. I don't know. I still think there was something pretty iconic about this, especially on a TV show. To see that level of a ship on a TV show in 78 was like insane.
Yeah.
So I liked them. I've always been a fan of those two ships.
I agree. I was just gonna—it's no coincidence. I think I remember reading somewhere that there was a little legal scuffle between Lucas and the creators of that show because of the sort of what Rick just called the lifting of ideas. But I don't know. I think I would say that you could definitely see at least, especially in the markings, where the Viper took a lot of inspiration from the X-Wing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I think the Raiders, weren't they kind of disc, the old ones,
yeah.
Weren't they kind of disc shaped? Yeah, the new one doesn't, you know, I think it's a pretty, it looks, I can't believe I'm about to say this, it reminds me a little bit of those lame vulture droids from the new Star Wars movies.
Yeah, yeah.
In its design. I just wanted to say that for the heck of saying it.
Yeah, and they did that similar where there's like the circular wings with a pod in the middle for the new ones.
Yeah, but they don't talk and look stupid like a vulture droid, so don't worry.
Another ship that I think did that same kind of thing, and I didn't, I mean, I saw this when I was a kid, but I didn't remember until I looked it up, was the, have you guys seen Buck Rogers' ship lately? From the old show of the 70s?
No.
Yeah, I mean, now I think it predates Star Wars.
Buck Rogers as a franchise does, yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, yeah, the show that had, who's the guy? Gil Gerard?
Don Bailey?
Erin Gray.
Oh, Erin Gray. She was glorious.
Let's
man.
Do a light rope dance at the end.
But yeah, that ship also looked like it borrowed stuff from Star Wars, man, or maybe the same people designed it.
What's the name of that ship?
Buck Rogers Spaceship. I have no idea. Moving along, there's some spaceships out, or aspects of spaceships that I find are really more far out than the spaceships themselves. Anybody watching any sci-fi has to suspend some sort of disbelief. But some of this stuff is just ridiculous. Very popular in the Star Trek series is food replicators. Now, I think we're not too far from making a spaceship. And if we really wanted to, we can make a spaceship. But there's no way in hell we're going to be able to make a food replicator. Am I right?
Don't tell me what I can and can't do.
Look, we can't even make a robot that would make food, let alone a friggin' replicator.
Assemble food on a subatomic level as a push of a button.
The most advanced robot we have is that robot from Rocky that bought Pauly his beers.
That's true. Hey, there's a pancake robot that they have. So basically, no, you could have food robots, but you'd be limited to pancakes and drinks.
I'm going to go ahead and say that most of our food is made by robots now. Have you ever seen how it's made?
Yeah, but
it's all robots.
Yeah, but you need the material to make it out. We're not making it out of elements in the ether.
Well, of course. Yes. No, but you're saying that we don't have robots yet. And I'm saying, yo, dog, Mark Summers has shown me the light. We have some damn food-making robots.
I don't know, and you know, along those lines, where does a spaceship get its gravity from?
That's the big one. That is the most infeasible thing that all these ships have.
I was watching episode of Stargate Universe where they've got gravity inside the ship and everybody walks in an upright position. Then they had to do a spacewalk and repair the outside of the ship, and they have to use magnetic boots. What? Does the hull of the ship stop the internal gravity from working?
Good point.
They have gravity dampeners on the outside plating.
But why? So that they're not pulling in space dust?
Yeah, you get hitchhikers.
I guess you would. Picking up all kinds of weird stuff through space.
Yeah.
Let's go around the room and what aspect of spacecraft do you think is the most important or the coolest? Go, Tom.
Without a doubt, faster than light travel. Otherwise, space would be a long, boring slog punctuated by a lot of uninteresting encounters with empty planets, rocks, dust, and nothingness. But if you can zip around at several times the speed of light, you can actually get places quick, encounter new civilizations, and not intervene because you're Starfleet. And so
if you can break one of the fundamental laws by which our understanding of physics is based around, it'd be pretty sweet.
That's right. That's a theory. It's not a law. It's a theory. But it's a pretty damn good one.
Interstellar travel will only be an interesting affair if we can figure out a way to put ourselves to sleep for thousands of years and we'll only wake up when cool stuff happens, or figure out some way to ignore physics and travel super fast.
No, wait, man. I've seen Red Dwarf before. That cryostasis stuff never ends up well. Oh, that is a bad gig.
Bring a cat, everyone turns into a pile of dust. It's awesome.
Has there ever been an instance of cryostasis where it was like, yeah, dog, that was a good idea?
You always wake up with something weird happening. That's true. Go ahead, Keith.
Like the computer's gone homicidally bored in the time that you've been out.
Yeah, like program a computer that can play like solitaire.
Are you talking about Marvin?
I'm talking about everything.
Guide to the Galaxy?
Well, Marvin was older than the universe by like fivefold, wasn't he? Like some weird temporal anomaly made him crazy when it's old?
Absolutely, but he was massively depressed.
Well, having Alan Rickman voice him certainly didn't help that.
Not at all.
I mean, that movie was atrocious.
I always question the logic in, like, okay, we're going to do some interstellar travel. It's going to take a long, long time. We're going to have a computer run things while we're on our way there. Okay, let's make the computer self-aware and have a personality and have a need for, like, you know, social interaction so that it goes insane. No. Let's just put, like, a dumb, like, non-sentient computer in there to run all the systems. Let's do that instead.
Well, you're right, because it depends on the storyline, because there's only two versions. Either you have the, you know, super humanized personal emotion machine running the ship. And
HAL 3000.
Yeah, and he gets angry, bored, or psychotic, or all three. Or you have the cryo sleep sickness, and you wake up and you're diseased or mental or crazy. Dude, even in cartoons, even Ren and Stimpy got space madness.
Well, no, it's who put the button in the middle of the ship that ends the universe?
Well, that's what it's supposed to be.
It was red. It's blinking. You're not supposed to touch it.
Yeah, come on. That is
I have another idea. Guys, I have another, like, if you're going to do the, like, you know, we can't go faster than light, it's going to take a while. Launch, like, a dozen ships so that while all the humans are sleeping, they can, like, keep each other company and play games like dolphins as they swim along. You know how, like, dolphins entertain themselves? They, like, play tag and, like, laugh together. Hey, what's going on?
No. Each other outside the windows.
Yeah,
all
like,
it takes is one of those computers to go psychotic now, and it can ruin the fun for everybody.
Well, one, it could beach the whole fleet. But, I mean, you gotta, you know, you just gotta hope that at least if they've got their buddies with them, you know, hey, what do you think's gonna happen when the humans wake up? I don't know. It'd be kind of cool. Ooh, I can't wait to find out. You know, they're, like, chilling around. They're like a pod of dolphins skipping through space.
I think if humanity's gonna have any kind of future in space exploration, like extra solar system, you know, exploration, you've gotta have, like, full-on colony ships. You've got to have, like, yo, dog, this isn't going to be a tour of duty. This is going to be a floating space colony.
You're
going
to live your life on this ship en route to this, you know,
and your children will live their lives on this ship.
Yeah, and your descendant someday will make it to this other planet. I think that's a far more likely scenario in our future.
But here's what's going to burn their bottoms. Like, five generations into this massive, epic space odyssey, like, some rich kid from Earth from, like, 3 weeks ago is going to zip by them on his knee faster than, like, space cruiser. Like, look at these geezers in that old Mark II.
That is going to
suck. It's all for nothing.
As they're rocketing through space, all this time will have passed on Earth, right? So, like, all this great... Isn't that the way it works? Like, as you're traveling at faster and faster speed, time passes slowly for you, but faster on Earth. Isn't that right?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, like, these, like, super evolved humans in, like, way faster ships are now hunting them for sport. It's like a sport. Shoot, like, ancient human star, you know, spacefarers.
Death Race 8000.
You know what? You put Ving Rhames in that, and I will watch it.
Hail, aliens. We're so glad to have encountered you. From what planet do you come? Dude, I'm from New Jersey. You guys have been out here forever. It's just some kid. It's just some, like, hooligans. Space hooligans.
So, like, if you can go faster than light, and as the theory states, you know, the closer you get to the speed of light, the slower time gets, then you wouldn't really need any cryogenic chambers, right? Because... eventually, wouldn't you get to where time is so slow that you're not going to age, you know, in comparison to the time outside of the ship? So you really don't need stasis pods and all that kind of stuff.
No, I think you yourself would still die, though. I mean, I think it wouldn't keep you. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not a physicist. I'm just shooting from the, like, sci-fi, like, geek tip here. But I think for you, like, you know, 80 years later, you're still an old geezer ready to kick it, even if thousands of years have passed back on Earth, right? Am I wrong about that?
Nah, you are correct.
Yeah, 10,000 light years is still a hell of a long distance travel regardless of time dilation.
I don't care how many antioxidants you eat, you ain't going to live 10,000 years.
But those 10,000 years are Earth years. Those aren't your years.
But there are still years for you. Yeah. Now, I don't know the proper exchange rate. We should probably Google this or know
from
more.
From Euro to you are dying.
No.
That was a stretch.
I'm thinking we don't Google anything and we just leave our, like, we just lay bare for our audience our complete lack of a grasp of physics and interstellar travel.
So you're in your spacecraft, you're going faster than light. What happens when you turn on your headlights?
They turn on?
Yeah, but do they shine in front of you?
They keep up with you. It's relative.
What if
you would see it from your viewpoint, you would see it as though the light were traveling at the normal speed of light, right?
Correct.
Oh God, this is going to be the worst podcast ever.
No, I know that one from, like, you know, like science 101. Like, oh man, I know physics now. Oh yeah, kid. Well, here, work this. Tell me about this friction. Oh, never mind. Once the math kicked in, I was like, oh God. We're all thinking about this now. I don't get it.
Grant, what do you think is a cool concept or thing about spaceships that we've seen in sci-fi movies and television shows?
Well, I was actually going to obviously say faster than light travel, but now I'm kind of half wondering about the heat dissipation of the ships, because they're not going to be able to shed thermal energy very readily, and also holodecks. You know why? Because holodecks would be fucking sweet.
You know what? I don't understand why people just didn't live in holodecks.
Right.
I mean,
those things have to take mad amounts of energy to, you know, they have to take mad amounts of energy to run.
But we're flying through space.
Yeah, and you need the energy for flying through space.
But the holodecks never really, like, you know, Captain Kirk was, I'm sorry, they didn't have holodecks in Star Trek. Picard never said, "Who's in the holodeck? I need power to the shields."
Well, I'm sure when they hit red alert, they shut off the damned holodecks, implied.
What was the one where they took over the ship from the holodeck?
The Herogens. Well, the Herogens extended the holodeck to encompass, like, three or four decks of Voyager, but was it Moriarty that
the
Enterprise?
Yes.
That's right.
What if you were in the holodeck and your theme while you were in there was to create another holodeck?
I wouldn't need another holodeck because the orgy would be going on pretty good.
All right, now here's another question that, since no one's going to answer that one, because it would
I would answer that.
It would end up being like a mirror in a mirror, and it just continues forever.
I think
feedback. Holodeck feedback.
Right. Sorry.
I think there are limits to what the holodeck can do. Like, it can't create, like, arbitrary matter, which at least I think that was explained at some point, or I read that in some, like, Star Trek lore, but it doesn't keep him from, like, full-on creating, like, Robin Hood, you know? So I don't really know.
I am not a merry man.
All right, yeah. If I was sitting on a chair, okay, let's say I'm making love to my sweet gynoid.
Wait, okay. Is this a hologram gynoid or an actual physical gynoid?
Or a Whoopi Goldberg gynoid.
Ugh. It's no
Whoopi
gynoid,
nothing. Sorry.
So, yeah, I go in and I'm turning it into, you know, like a porn chamber. And I got my sweet gynoid there and we're making love on the floaty heart-shaped bed. And then, like, Picard walks in and then it turns back to, like, graph paper. You know, like the grids on the wall. Do I fall? Like, I'm sitting on the bed. Do I fall to the ground?
It's like, yeah, it would let you down gently, is my guess. There are safety protocols. It wouldn't just drop you.
Assuming there weren't. Assuming, like, Picard came in, and in his disgust, he overrode all the, like, oh, what are you doing, Ricky? And then, like, off went
and
all
the... And then I break my boner on the ground. That's
right.
Not good.
Well, right. Wouldn't the inertial dampeners save you from that injury?
Yeah, there are safety protocols. You wouldn't be injured. What I want to know is, let's say you're making love to your sweet robot wife, and then she vanishes, right?
No one said anything about marriage.
What happens to your, you know, your love juices when the gynoid disappears?
That's right, because that's real stuff.
See, that's right, because Rick's like... Rick's point is, like, basically whatever, like, the holodeck holo projects or whatever vanishes. But, yeah, any fluids you may have emitted are just, like, dripping all over the floor, and then Jean-Luc slips on them, you know?
I won't.
That's one of those horrific things you ever talk about on this.
No, I guess it's not the same because she's not disappeared. She's just going away. Because I was thinking, like, if I was in her, then she disappears. Like, I don't see my junk. So does my junk get nipped off in the
No,
room?
Your junk
right,
is
it
then...
doesn't because it's just a hologram around it.
Yeah.
Is there sensations in a hologram?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you can touch stuff and that sort of thing. It gets rendered somehow. I think they got a 3D printer there.
And Rick, you've got my mind off on such a tangent right now. Like, I'm immediately conjuring up, like, what about sensations of moisture? There really was no moisture. So suddenly... But I'm not going to get any further into any
but
of that.
But in space, no one can hear you scream from the dryness.
Like, is it a sensation of getting out of a swimming pool all of a sudden into a cold atmosphere? Because it's like the water was never there, so you don't really feel that.
Well, I will refer you to the first season, The Next Generation episode, Encounter on Rigel 4, where Picard was, or where Wesley Crusher was doused in water, and when he stepped out of the holodeck, he was still wet. Thereby indicating that some of the materials generated in the holodeck were capable of existing.
So they're doing a little bit of replication.
Either that or the writers just didn't think about it properly. Also, that's not the name of the episode, but that did happen in that situation. So, yes, I know what Rigel 4 is, and I know it was not in that episode.
They kind of hand wave a lot of the limits of the replicators and the holodeck, so I think we can pretty much make any assumptions we want.
I would have to say so. It doesn't exist. If we have to suspend disbelief, then we don't have to believe anything we say. It can all be made up.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Rigel, have any of you guys seen the show Farscape?
Yes.
Yes.
What do you feel about the ship that lives?
Oh,
I think it's
the bioship.
Cool.
Like, yeah. The notion of the bioship or the bioship on Farscape?
Well, the notion of it. There's been a few shows that have had ships that are... quote unquote alive. Farscape had Moya, which was the main ship on the show. And then Moya had a child that was, what was the name of the child ship that had a
con? It was called Little Boya.
Straight out of Moya.
It most certainly was not. What the heck was the name of that ship? I don't know. But it was a ship that had a gun because Moya did not have any weapons.
Wait, is that how you knew it was a boy? Because it had a gun?
Nice.
Not because boys play with guns, but because it was phallic.
No, we got that joke.
Okay, just making sure.
That's the new show that I'm watching on Netflix. And one thing that was really, for those who aren't familiar, but I'm imagining everybody is, an astronaut from Earth is testing a new space ship or space travel type method thing, and he gets stuck in a wormhole and he ends up in some other universe where there's all these people that are far smarter and brighter than us and have spaceships and all kinds of stuff. Ends up on this other ship called Moya. And there's a scene in the show where he wants to get there's the ship outside and they want to bring it on board. And he's like, you know, yelling, turn on the tractor beam. You know, don't you guys have a tractor beam? I thought that was funny. And that really went nowhere. I apologize.
No, I like it. He made our sci-fi assumptions.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that was really, that kind of made the show. Yeah, okay. Thank God, because I thought I was going nowhere.
No, it was good.
We keep talking like this. I'm sorry.
Do you like the concept of a living ship, though, Keith? Because I think it, like, when the Enterprise is getting attacked, right, what's always happening? Shields are failing. That creates the sense of vulnerability. Like, we can only take so much more pounding. But when Moya gets attacked, Moya is hurting. So it's like your pet is getting hurt.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
I really liked it because there were certain things that, you know, throughout all the seasons that would happen where similar problems, you know, shield was failing, but, you know, they would have like a living organism twist to it. And I thought that was really cool.
Bio shields are failing.
Well, yeah, but
bio life support is failing.
Like, you thought it was an earthquake.
Bio sensors are picking up.
You thought there was an earthquake in space, but then it was really just because the ship was hungry and it was its tummy rumbling.
Exactly.
Yeah, it had it
so
came down
stupid.
With irritable bowel syndrome or something.
Right.
Hey, it's a Jim Henson TV show. It's not stupid.
I actually thought my of all people, my mom got me into that. She's like a huge fan of the show, and she's got like all of them, and it's actually pretty good.
I enjoyed it. One thing that I found interesting about the show Farscape is that when Farscape went off the air, half the cast and crew went to other sci-fi shows.
That sounds,
like Stargate.
Nice. Are they part of the
Did
same
really?
Universe?
I didn't realize that.
Is there a connected sci-fi universe here between the Hensonverse and Stargate?
I would have to think so.
I want to believe in that world.
Where did the blue mushroom-headed creature that I think was the pilot, if I remember right, go?
Yes. Well, I guess pilot stayed on Moya.
In Moya.
Correct. In Moya.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now that we're talking about Stargate, what do you guys think of this? The ships on that show? These ships were more along the lines of battle cruisers, like Battlestar Galactica, mostly for entering into big combat against the Gua'uld. And all those races. I really liked the ships on that show. I liked that they were, you know, fighty ships, I guess. They had guns. They had shields. They were meant to go into battle. And I really – that whole design of ship, starting probably with the movie Aliens, where they had the Nostromo or Nostromo. How am I pronouncing that incorrectly?
However you want.
Nostradamus, I believe.
I really liked when, you know, sci-fi got away from the aerodynamic look, the sleek look, the, you know, sporty look of ships and started making them more utilitarian, like those ships that you see in Stargate. And like I said, Aliens.
Aliens has a ton of really awesome, just crazy, whacked out, kind of military, kind of utilitarian, like... The ships on there are – it's believable. Like, you think that – like, that looks like the kind of thing that a space marine's going to come out of.
Right. That's something that we could build.
Yeah. Well, it kind of started that aesthetic sensibility of humanity as the rugged industrialists of
right.
sci-fi settings, because in the same way, you see a lot of that in the Warhammer universe. You'll see a lot of that in StarCraft, which same thing, whatever. You see a lot of that notion of humanity as these industrious, rugged, very metallic, you know, very rigid people.
They, I mean, even Star Wars has some ships that they're not, it's not quite as extreme, but like the frigate we talked about, it has elements of that, but really more towards things like those blockade runner ships.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Corellian Corvettes? Yeah.
Yeah.
They had, like, that, you know, bulky, kind of, like, bolted together, different crap. Didn't matter if it was aerodynamic and cool. It was, like, it was a living quarter slash workspace thing that could go down and land and...
Right, like, it started out as Space Lab, and we kept slapping stuff onto it.
Yes, exactly. I like that.
FYI, guys, Grant knows Corellian Corvettes because he played X-Wing. I don't care what he says.
No, no, that is exactly why I know that. I know. I learned so damn much about the ships of Star Wars between X-Wing and TIE Fighter.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I bought X-Wing and TIE Fighter, and it wouldn't run on my computer, so I never played it.
I love that game.
Those games would still hold up now. I would say that between that or Free Space, which you want to talk about some beautiful, gigantic spaceships, Free Space 2, I believe? Yeah. Beautiful, gigantic spaceships. Those games still hold up.
Yeah, by the time I did get a computer, or by the time that game came out, I did have a good computer, and I loved playing Free Space. All right, I wanted to talk about your favorite ships. What is your favorite ship of all time, Grant?
Hey, before we get there, let's talk about stupid-looking ships. is that on the list?
Let's do stupid ships first, then. That was at the bottom of the list.
Because I think we should end with the good ones.
Okay.
I feel like I'm going to be arguing against a lot of what you all think is stupid here. That's my prediction. I'm going to be fending some stupid ass design here.
And let's start with, like, we did our favorite Star Wars ship. Let's do our most stupid Star Wars ship.
Okay.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, dude, you're leading the pack.
Well, I wouldn't find it stupid if I wanted to fly around space in a light post, but. Since I do not care to fly around space in a light post or lamp post or light bulb or whatever you want to call it, my vote in the Star Wars universe for dumbest ship, Slave One.
Wow.
Oh, man, you just made every Star Wars fan in
it. I don't even like the character of Boba Fett, but I will say that the Slave One's a pretty sweet-looking vehicle.
And this is based purely on... When I saw the movies for the first time and I saw that ship, it was so awkward, it bothered me and, like, took me out of the movie. I'm like, what is he standing up in that thing, flying? Like, I was so confused by it that I just have to hate it.
There's two things that make it look sweet. One, it looks like a giant fucking horseshoe crab. And horseshoe crabs are probably the creepiest living creatures on Earth. Horseshoe crabs are some scary looking motherfuckers.
They're weird.
Number two... It kind of looks like somebody took, like, a giant Western-style mech, cut the arms and legs off of it. Like, it's like a torso. Like it is a frightening, crappy, rusty metal torso. And I don't want that thing flying at me.
Okay, now I like it.
Like, that thing's in robot jocks. It just got punched in half.
It looks like a giant codpiece, actually, flying through space. If you think about it.
It's Gene Simmons' space crotch. You know what? The best, you got the best.
Still frightening. Still don't want it coming at me.
Yeah, much like a giant codpiece. Less.
All right, how about you, Grant? What do you think's the stupidest looking ship?
In Star Wars. Yeah, I just didn't like a lot of the ones in Phantom Menace. I didn't like the Nubian Royal Cruiser. Which I did not know they were called Nubians until today, but I guess that's what you call something from Naboo.
Nubian.
Yeah, did not know that. So I don't like the Nubian Royal Cruiser, and I don't like the Trade Federation battleships. Like the big donuts with a dot in the middle.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
I don't like these either. Good call.
I am unimpressed by them. They're not bad, they're just bland. Like, because, like, let's take a look at, say, the Pod Racers, which were an example of really good kind of vehicle design in that movie. It's just really bland. Because at least the Royal Cruiser gives me something to hate. Those battleships are just, what is this?
Yeah,
Buck Rogers, get this odd shit out of here.
How about you, Tom?
Well, one, there's that entire species of ship that I despise. It's a ship slash droid. It is obviously the Vulture droid. Just because they take what could be a cool, like, oh, okay, it's a purely, you know, droid-based ship. But then they're, like, turning their heads each other. Like, you can almost hear them, like, saying the original Roger, Roger that the stupid droid troopers say. They don't say it, but they're just as annoying. Like, they have dumb eyes and, like, looking at each other. They're just imbecilic.
And yeah, it's the notion of a purely droid spaceship that it's, like, articulate and movable in Star Wars is pretty badass. Like, that would be a really good idea.
Well, if it weren't for the fact we already know that droids are completely incompetent. I mean, there's not a droid that can get anything done that a person
can't do. R2-D2 is the only droid that carries his weight in Star Wars, and he's a trash can on wheels with, like, a little...
Right, what does that tell you? Just stick with the basic astromech design. Don't even give him opposable thumbs. That just leads to bad things. Like, nothing good comes out of, like, elegant droid design in the Star Wars universe.
And I think the weirdest part is that really his only job is to be plugged into the back of a spaceship and take care of business.
Right, he's basically like an...
Everything else
better... He's an unwieldy USB drive that beeps a lot.
He's a portable entertainment center. With, you know, as witness on his doing duty on Jabba's barge, and a nav computer. Those are his functions. And also, he'll store your lightsaber.
Oh, and serve drinks.
So he's a vending machine, essentially, / nav computer.
So I guess it's back to me now.
Wait, no, not quite, because I've got one more, and it'll hit home quick and hard, and we'll be done here. The absolute dumbest design for any ship... That just and did not belong. What the hell were you thinking? Was Bail Organa's like 57 Chevy convertible that he pulls up with to save Yoda? Yoda just escaped like death at the hands of like the most evil Sith Lord the galaxy's ever known, and he hops in somebody's in basically Christine from that movie and flies off with Bail Organa, who's Jimmy Schmitz, Okay, fine. I dealt with him. At least he tried to like play the role seriously. But good grief, man! Are you kidding me? Up he rolls and I'm surprised they just didn't have hydraulics as he went away or something stupid.
And you have to admit that 57 Chevy design was obviously a Chip Foose redesign.
Let me say that I was sort of I'm bad mouthing Schmitz as Bail Organa, he actually did a pretty decent job. I mean, he was no worse than, like, Sam Jackson, not trying to be anybody but Sam Jackson as Mace Windu. So, I just want to bash the ship alone.
I'm upset that you're bad-mouthing his Narglatch XJ-2 airspeeder, which isn't even a spaceship, but is an airspeeder.
My mistake, I'm sorry.
As opposed to a land speeder?
Then you know what? I hate whatever ship he got in after being in that thing. How's that? So dumb.
Well, let me check Wikipedia to see if it has what that ship's called.
That's Wookiepedia, people, not Wikipedia.
You know, the only thing missing from the Star Wars universe at this point is like a prop-driven biplane. Just let's put that in while we're at it.
Very low tech.
It's the Red Space Baron. Look out.
I guess my most... I really don't dislike a lot of the ships in Star Wars. The A-wing it does nothing for me. Lame. I mean, it's just like, okay, let's make a ship without any of the wings and all the frills that we've been putting on all the other stuff. Here you go.
It's their answer to the TIE Interceptor. It needs to be sharp and maneuverable.
But it's, well, we'll get into that in a little bit. But if I had to pick something, it would have to be the Blockade Runner.
Because
that ship, if you remember at the beginning of that movie, the very first Star Wars movie that was released, it's got like how many engines on the back of it? 40? 50? And they're catching up to it? That thing should haul ass!
That's true. For something called a blockade runner, it sort of implies like agility and speed, and it gets overtaken by like a lumbering cruiser.
Exactly! That ship should that ship should be flying. It should be on the other side of the universe before they even figure out that the droids are on Tatooine.
But they damaged its critical systems. They lost main power almost immediately.
Plus, you guys, you're forgetting, Keith.
It's a blockade runner. It's designed to not lose criticals. If any system fails on it, it shouldn't be the engines.
Don't forget, though, Keith, it was the will of the Force that the blockade runner be caught.
Oh, also, Star Wars is fake.
Oh, and also, this is the same ship that I was talking about that's all, like, clunky and big and weird, so.
I love the blockade runner, so.
Yeah, well, that like I said, if I gotta pick one, and I'm looking at a model of one right now, and it's got 8, 9, 11 engines on the back of it, and the engines have more mass than the entire ship.
Link us.
Well, it's Lego models.
Wow. Guys, I'm still mad about the 57 Chevy. To the malt shop we must go!
The XJ2 Proglock Airspeeder.
Like, seriously, they went and had a malt and a cheeseburger after so Yoda could, like, nurse his wounds after the fight. The girl came up on roller. They went to Dax's Diner, of course. Now it all makes sense.
Yep. Annoying.
He's working out for that sweet American Graffiti Star Wars crossover.
Okay, so now that we know what ships we like and dislike in Star Wars, are there any ships that are out there that you don't like that are non-Star Wars? We'll start with Tom.
Any ships that I don't like that are non-Star Wars? Yes, there's one ship that never sat well with me, and thankfully I don't think it really gained a lot of popularity, so most people don't have to worry about it. There was this, like, you know, during the Star Wars era, that everybody was trying to make a sci-fi movie, and there was one sci-fi movie called Battle Beyond the Stars or something like that.
I remember that.
So then you'll remember that the spaceship resembled a hammerhead shark with breasts where its mouth should be.
I don't remember that.
It is the most atrocious.
That sounds awesome, really. What was this called?
Google it.
I'm Battle, Googling right now.
Battle Beyond the Stars. As if to imply that, like, this was, like, even beyond the scope of Star Wars in its grandeur and majesty. When, in fact, you know, and looking back, it probably
did. It looks like a Balchinian.
Do you see it?
Wow.
Yeah, it's an atrocity. I hated that show. Like, as a kid, I'm sitting there, like, just hate, like, seething, like, oh, I wish that ship would get blown up. And, of course, it was, like, the good guy's ship, so it didn't. Oh, how that grated on me.
How about you, Rick?
I'm going to get hatred on this one, too, man. But I have to say, although I love the movie, and I love the TV show, and I love the inside of the ship, the outside of
Firefly,
the ship...
Firefly, isn't it?
It is! I hate it!
Firefly?
It's fucking horrible! It looks like a giant mechanical chicken dog.
I'll have to agree with you on that one. It, as much as I like everything about this show, that's just one dumb-looking ship.
It's just, it's goofy. Like, it has a neck and a head and four legs and a tail. Like, it's horrible. I just don't like it. And I'll put a picture in the show notes that's
actually...
It looks
actually, so good.
It looks good in that picture. Overall, it looks like a giant... Like, I don't know, it's like a flying...
It is avian in nature. It does
it's
look like a bird.
It's a lightning bug. It's a firefly. It's a lightning bug. It's got the big lit-up tail and...
I just don't like it. It's goofball-looking.
You're goofball-looking.
Next.
All right, Grant, how about you?
No, I actually cannot think of a spaceship design that fills me with that much animosity, honestly. There's nothing that I seriously dislike.
Oh, really? You don't like... What about Starbug?
Fuck is Starbug?
It's from the Red Dwarf or whatever?
That Red Dwarf is a fucking comedy show. I'm not going to hate it for its aesthetic sensibilities. I mean, you know what? Okay, if I have to say something, I'm going to say Lone Star's Winnebago from Spaceballs.
All right, there you go.
There you go.
Because, come on, that's entirely infeasible. And it runs on liquid Schwartz? What kind of fucking ship is made to run on liquid Schwartz? Ugh.
What about Spaceball? What was it, Spaceball 1?
Spaceball 1 was fantastically well-designed.
Now that
we want to talk about a ship that transforms into a giant, sweet-ass mecha. I will say this. Why do you have a giant switch that makes it go from suck to blow like that without the interlocks? Big, big, big design flaw. But whatever.
Well, there you go.
Oh, and in general, I'll say that I dislike spaceships with any type of sail. Even if it's supposed to be a solar sail, I don't care. I don't like it.
Wow, how come nobody mentioned the obvious then?
What, Icarus or you
talking? Count Dorku's solar sailor ship.
Yeah, that sounds like you can fault Christopher Lee.
I thought that was like a weird stretch on the part of the Star Wars people. I'm like, yes, there we have been posing technology that, you know, maybe that's possible. So then they incorporated it in there, and it's so contrary to what the Star Wars universe is.
Well, Keith, at that point, they were down to that or the space Studebaker, so they decided to go with the sail.
Oh, man. All right. I got to say, and this is really only a product of its time, but one of the ships that I hate more than anything else is the Eagle from Space 1999.
Yes.
I'm sure most of you have never heard of this show and probably will never go to see it, but this was like a longish. It looks like a cell phone tower or a telephone tower with a cockpit on the front of it. It actually looks like a salamander. That's what it looks like.
I just looked it up.
What, yeah, why have I never heard of this before?
I have now that I've seen this.
And it looks like a salamander without the tail, basically. But the reason I hate it is when they would show it in the show, it would be banking and turning and rotating, all this stuff that you don't do in space. And it only has engines on the back. It didn't have, like, retro rockets that would push it in different directions. It was, but again, you know, like I said, it's a product of our time when we didn't know what space was, I guess, in the 70s.
why does it have big feet? Like, why did they shape it like a dumb, like you said, like a space salamander?
It looks like a dollar store toy of a spaceship. It doesn't even look like something that Hollywood would invent.
It looks like a half-built model of another spaceship, and somebody got either lost the parts to it because they bought it at the thrift store, or just lost interest because it looked like it was going to suck when they were done.
You know what? That's it. It is a skeletal Aibo.
You know what?
Yes.
The engineers in this case were like, you know, the designers were like, okay, we need the landing gear to retract when it's in space. No, it's space. Don't you remember the teachings of Tom? You know, we don't have to retract him. There's no drag or anything. And in that case, the designer should have won out. Sorry, that's just going to look stupid.
You know what it really looks like? It looks like a gas tank that should be attached to another ship.
Yo, dog, it looks bad.
Now, I've got another ship that is both the greatest ship and the worst ship ever. And that would be the Heart of Gold from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Reading the book, it was just like the greatest ship ever with its improbability drive. But when they made the movie and it was just a big sphere, and I'm like, that looks stupid. And I'm going to have to reread the books to see if it is described as that. But it's definitely not what I envisioned in my mind when I was reading about it.
Well, the newer version, the newer movie didn't take a lot of its design cues from the original descriptions of things.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going off of, is the newer movie, the
Hammer and Tongs or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's nothing's ever going to look as good as it does in your imagination.
Jurassic Park did.
What?
Oh, let's not get off topic. That's a whole other show.
We just have a people yelling about dinosaurs episode, because I will have that. I will be there.
We can have a show about shitty dinosaurs and shittier dinosaurs.
I vote for the spaceship from Space 1999 as being the shittiest dinosaur ever.
Yeah, no, that's the worst ship ever.
You know what?
That makes
me
glad we're not in space like we should be in 1999.
You know what's funny, though? That Space 1999 ship looks like something that would get eaten by the Firefly ship.
If we were all living ships like Moya and Lex.
Yes.
Oh, God, no. If that Space 99 ship were alive, it would just be sitting there writhing in pain, begging for someone to kill it in a horrible, like, The Fly type voice.
I just see it flipping over and kicking its landing gear because it can't flip back over.
Like a turtle.
So, astronaut candidate, are you ready to take off into space in 1999? It's an honor to be chosen for this mission. Nah, I decided I don't want to do it. Why?
Like driving that piece of shit.
I just don't want to be seen in that ship. I'm sorry.
I'm going to take my Air Studebaker and maybe pick up some greenskin ladies.
Yeah, I've got a 57 Chevy speeder I can fly around and look cooler. Ugh. So bad.
Now that we've discussed what ships we like and don't like in Star Wars and don't like in all other space universes, let's go around the room and see what ships we like. We'll start with Grant.
All right, you know, we haven't touched much on video games, I feel like. So I have two video game ships that I feel like are worth noting. One is just the general assortment of ships in the game, in the Star Control universe.
Mm.
You know, did you all ever play Star Control 2, which was easily the pinnacle of the series?
I did not. Never knew it existed. I apologize for my lack of knowledge.
Fantastic array of well-designed spaceships in that game. I would recommend people look them up. Individually, they all reflect the character of their constituent species very well, and I love it. The other one I'm going to say is the Normandy from the Mass Effect universe. Simply because I love the amount of detail that they put into their, the fictional writing that went into dreaming up these ships.
Yeah.
Like you talk about the weapons systems and, like, they actually describe how large-scale space confrontations take place in this universe. Like, they come up with a lot of pseudo-hard science to make everything stick together, and it ends up working just fantastically well as a fictional universe to me. So, that's my second favorite.
How about you, Tom?
I'm going to go back to Macross again and say that I obviously, as mentioned before, I really like the SDF-1, but I also like the enemy ships, the race of aliens called the Zentradi. They have these huge, green, almost organic-looking ships that that travel around in, like, fleets of thousands, and there's, like, I think it's just the sheer number of ships that appear at once that make them impressive, but they alone are also cool. They shoot like a bazillion little laser beams at you, and these just massive volleys of fire. It's really awesome. If I could pop back over to Star Wars for a minute, I think I actually like, although I don't like any of its inhabitants or anything that happens to it or its role at all in the Star Wars universe or the movies in which it appeared.
No, this is our favorites, not the things that you have absolutely.
Yeah, that's a lot of justifying for whatever.
In spite of all the things I don't like that are not the ship's fault, I actually like Grievous's ship that they rescue the Chancellor from episode 1, 2, 3, which I think is called
The big ship.
Yeah, the Invisible Hand or something. I think is the name of the ship. Never mind that it's crawling with Vulture droids too. It's still a cool ship. It has like that cool like spire in the back. It's just a very nice design. Very nice design.
Cool.
I remember thinking it looked cool.
Rick, what ships do you like?
My absolute most favorite ship of all time has to be the mothership from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, cool.
Big surprise there.
I changed my answer to agree with Rick.
From the visual, the mass giganticness of it, the sounds it makes, and, you know, oddly enough, it was created by Ralph McGuire, the god behind anything and everything cool in Star Wars, so
that's true.
How could I go wrong? But that, to me, that's the epitome of what a spaceship is to me.
You know, it looked a whole lot like E.T.'s ship, too.
No way! E.T.'s ship was like a goofball circle with some like goofy pods attached to a flickering lights. E.T.'s ship is horrible.
It still had that child's top shape to it, but you know, big on the bottom, small at the top. But no, I have to agree.
So you just described my dream girl there.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, that ship was great, and what can't you like about a ship that you can control with an organ?
A synthesizer.
Once again, you just described my dream girl.
Yeah, Yes, any ship that I can natively talk to with my vast wall of synthesizers here in my studio, I will gladly be a part of liking that thing.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to take some license here since I'm kind of running this show, and I've got a list of ships that are my favorite.
Oh, wait, I got one more. The Recognizers from Tron.
They're not in space.
All right,
they're
it.
In cyberspace.
Oh damn!
I lose.
Damn, I think we all lose for having heard that.
Something that I haven't brought up, and I can't explain why, because it's one of my favorite shows of all time. Babylon 5, I think, had the greatest collection of space vehicles, bar none. It was better than Star Trek, better than Star Wars, better than Jurassic Park.
That's the show that was, like, not Deep Space Nine, right?
No. Deep Space Nine was the show that was not Babylon 5.
I'm not sure about the... Wait, which one had Worf in it?
That would be Deep Space Nine.
Right. So Babylon 5 is the bad version, right? It's like the GoBots.
Oh my god, this is just blasphemy. in Babylon 5 they had these far advanced races, the Vorlons, the Membari, the Shadows, and all of these ships were so organic looking. Now what's really interesting is when you go back and watch it, they all look like really cheesy 3D renders from art school kids, because that's what the technology was at that time. But they just looked great. And my favorite ship in all of those has to be the Star Fury, which was the ship that the humans flew. And the reason it's my favorite is because it followed the laws of physics in space. If it was going in one direction, it wouldn't bank and turn right or bank and turn left like the stupid Enterprise or freaking the Eagle from 1999. It would actually have jets on it so it could rotate in its current trajectory and shoot behind it or shoot around it. But it was like realistic as far as the movement went. And that the Star Fury on Babylon 5 is like the coolest ship ever, because it's the first time I'd ever seen that, where somebody actually, you know, said, let's make a ship that actually would work the way they work in space. Bringing up video games, I have a video game ship that's my favorite, and it's the Protoss Carriers. If any of you guys play StarCraft, you know what I'm talking about.
Yonzo.
Those are freaking cool.
The human battle cruisers are about 100 times cooler.
Well, those look like those are the Space Marine ships.
Yeah, the Yamato cannon. Protoss have nothing on the Yamato cannon.
I don't know, man. And I guess for my last ship, it's not really a great ship by any means. But again, like the Star Fury, you know, was a ship that brought a concept to spacecraft. The ship that Obi-Wan took when he was traveling to the planet where the bugs live to rescue Anakin.
Geonosha?
Yeah, Geonosha. He was in that ship, and that ship had that ring that allowed him to use hyperdrive.
Oh, that was cool.
That was like when that, you know, the ship came out of hyperspace, and he kind of like he undocks from it or
unlocks
from
that.
It or whatever. That was like one of the coolest things I ever saw in space. So, and just for that fact alone, the way that worked, that somebody said, you know what, this is probably how it worked, where you would have your little two-seater coupe space vehicle, but you wouldn't be able to do interstellar travel, so we'll throw this ring around it. So, yeah, I love that ship.
Yeah, that was actually one of the parts that I liked about the prequels at the beginning of one of the movies. I don't remember which one. But when they showed all of those ships showing up, like, one at a time, like, boom, 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 boom.
Oh, yeah, showing, all with coming their out rings. Of hyperspace.
Yeah, coming out of hyperspace and then detaching from their rings. That was sick. I did like that.
You know what I'll say about that ship? I'm not – it's clearly not an immediate predecessor to it. But it's almost like – when the Empire took over, they were looking at that ship's design for as an inspiration for the TIE fighter, and they were like, just dispense with the interstellar ring. We'll just deploy these from capital ships. We don't need to spend the money on letting them warp around. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it has like that central pod surrounded by like, you know, wings, so it's kind of similar, actually.
Yeah, it is, actually. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Any last thoughts about spacecraft in general, gentlemen?
I wish we had some that were still flying here in America, but we don't.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
We do. We don't have any with people in them anymore, I guess.
No, now we're launching everything out of Brazil and other countries, and we got this crazy guy who, you know, owns music stores and aircrafts that thinks he's going to space, but it's never going to happen.
That Virgin will make it to space, you watch.
I'll say this without sounding like I'm trying to endorse or get political at all. The nickname, because he was a crazy dreamer about stuff like this, of one of the presidential candidates was Newt Skywalker at some point in the past.
Get out of here.
Yeah, because he had all these, like, he's like advocating like moon colonization and like going to Mars and all these crazy far-fetched ideas. The rest of his platform might be utter crap, but that's kind of cool at least.
He's got my vote.
Yeah, that's his plan right there.
Yeah, honestly, he's like a nerdy PhD, and if he paired up with another potential running mate or a potential running mate who is also a nerdy PhD and ran on like, we're gonna do cool stuff like go to space platform, he might just get people to vote for him.
Absolutely, get the nerd crowd.
Yep.
Well, with that last thought, I think we've had a great show today. Appreciate y'all listening. Anybody have anything else they would like to take care of?
Like housekeeping or something, you mean?
Yeah, housekeeping. There we go.
Grant's done that a couple times.
I think I can. I will say this. If you can go on iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, rate us, and give us comments. It's greatly appreciated. It helps us get our name out there, helps us get the show out there, and we do this for you all. We do it because we love you. We love you like our holographic gynoids.
And if you and your holographic gynoid, or real-life gynoid, don't like the iTunes, you can go to www.nerdstravaganza.com and listen to some shows, download, send us an email with some show ideas. That'd be awesome. And while you're there, watch out because Skylab's a fallen.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and have a lovely week.
Peace!
Also, I want to say this. I googled Beyond the Stars. There's like boobs in that movie, right?
Yeah, the ship has them.